Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. Always wonderful to be with you on a warm Wednesday afternoon. Isn't it great to be in spring? And the cold of winter is behind us, Baruch Hashem. We're enjoying the sunshine and the beautiful spring weather here in Johannesburg. Let's talk a little bit about, I would like to share with you my experience from last week, which I think is relevant, and there's some important messages to be shared. Last week, I was fortunate to participate in the Rabbinic Conference in Cape Town. So I missed my show last Wednesday. I hope you missed me because I missed you too. And so I'd like to draw out some nuggets from that wonderful experience. Once a year, the Chief Rabbi puts together a conference for the rabbis and rabbitsons of South Africa. And it usually is a very well-organized and inspirational coming together with our colleagues. Very important for rabbis and rabbitsons to meet and to share experiences and to be inspired. And it really is unique that this happens in South Africa. It's quite rare that rabbis and rabbitsons from all parts of Orthodox Jewish life come together. So whether you are modern Orthodox or whether you what we call Haredi or Yeshivish or whether you Sephardi or Ashkenazi or Hasidish, doesn't make a difference. We all are brothers and sisters working together, doing God's work and trying to share the beauty and light of Torah with the Jewish people. And that is one of the most fantastic things about the conference, is that there's such good will and good spirit, and everybody gets on, everybody makes an effort to get on, and it's not like you've got these groupings and these cliques and that are mixed together. It's not like that at all, which is really unique and wonderful. I don't think there's any other country in the world that has that, and it's such credit to our Chief Rabbi and to the rabbis and rabbitsons of South Africa who contribute to this. So the Chief Rabbi, as usual, did a fantastic job and set up a wonderful lineup of fascinating and inspiring and diverse speakers and presentations. It was in Cape Town in Sea Point at the President Hotel, and it really was a meaningful 3 days that we spent together. So what I would like to share with you is a few nuggets, a few interesting and inspiring points that are honed from those 3 days together. The first one coming from a talk that we had from Major General Yaakov Amidror, who used to be the National Security Advisor of Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's obviously a person who's got great insight into the Middle East, into the strategic setup of the Middle East, and he gave us a fascinating update. One of the things that he said, which I think is a very profound point and something that we should all bear in mind, and that is that we should acknowledge what has been gained. So although we are all quite fixated with what's going on in Gaza, and we are all very deeply hurt by the lies and the libels and the narrative that we see in the media, and Israel's accused of starving the people, and Israel's accused of genocide, that is all completely false. It's not accurate at all, and it's not a clear reflection of what's going on the ground. But the mainstream media, the legacy media, doesn't miss an opportunity to attack and to delegitimize and to accuse Israel, which is really painful for every Jew around the world. So we need to be able to put that aside. I try to stay away from those networks that are so anti-Israel. Most of the mainstream networks, including SABC, and I'll call it GNN, Goebbels News Network. The CNN is just so biased against Israel. And so we should try and get the facts and get the truth. And I just get too depressed when I see the lies that the media shares. and usually coming out of Hamas's propaganda wing. So straight from the Hamas media, Hamas propaganda, the media grabs it and takes it and shares the false stories with the world. But what we should keep our eyes on and remember is the tremendous gains that Israel has succeeded in achieving these last almost coming on 2 years. And it really is phenomenal, these 20 months, how much has been achieved. And he went through in detail, which I won't share with you, but just a brief overview is that we see that there was a tremendous threat coming from Hezbollah. Hezbollah is 20 times more powerful than Hamas. And it was really a gun to the head of Israel. And it was very frightening for Israel. Hezbollah's thousands of missiles that were aimed towards Israel. And there would have been a terrible slaughter of Jews. The press was expecting 15,000 casualties in Israel if war was declared with Hezbollah. And the amazing weakening of Hezbollah, the incredible BIPA operation that the Mossad and the Israeli Defense Forces carried out, and we very pretty much disabled Hezbollah, which is a phenomenal achievement. It was really something we need to recognize and appreciate. Of course, Iran, with the nuclear threat that was facing Israel, an existential threat that was facing Israel. And don't listen to the lies in the media that they didn't have nuclear weapons. They were near, you know, they lie on both sides. They say they didn't have nuclear weapons, which surely they did. And all responsible intelligence agencies around the world said that they were weeks, if not days, away from developing nuclear weapons, nuclear warheads. And secondly, now they say that they didn't destroy their nuclear capabilities. Well, of course, they don't want to, the left-wing media don't want to give any credit at all to President Trump and to Prime Minister Netanyahu, but certainly they did push it back a number of years. And Major General Amidror said that we should remember that it's quite devastating for the Iranian people because their nuclear program was a half a trillion dollar program, $500 billion was pumped into the nuclear program, which was destroyed by Israel and America, which is absolutely incredible. So that threat and a severe weakening of the theocracy in Iran was achieved. Syria also collapsed, and we have no we have no threat anymore from Syria because the Assad regime, which was aligned with the Iranians, was now removed. And that whole Shia crescent from Tehran all the way to the Mediterranean through Syria, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon is no more, which is really a great strategic achievement on Israel's part. And of course, we have the war in Gaza and the difficult and painful war in Gaza. And of course, Israel's pained greatly by the death of any civilians, all at the hands of Hamas, entirely the fault of Hamas. Hamas terrorists, they're supposed to be journalists, but they actually are terrorists hiding among civilians in hospitals. And when strikes are carried out, so, you know, they parade how Israel is attacking civilians, but Israel is actually attacking militants and terrorists. And unfortunately, sometimes civilians do get into the crossfire, which Israel goes to great lengths to avoid. But Hamas has to be destroyed. Hamas has to be removed. Hamas has to be dealt with in order for us to have a future in which we can have peace over there in Gaza. But so he said, don't forget what's been achieved. Although it is sticky and it is difficult in Gaza, so much has been achieved, and hopefully the final objectives will be achieved, and that is the hostages will be released and Hamas will be destroyed. We then had a talk by Rabbi Tzvi Rimon. Rabbi Rimon is the rabbi of Gush, of the Gush, Gush Etzion. He's the Rosh Kollel of the Gush Etzion Kollel. He is also the president of World Mizrahi. And he shared some interesting halachic questions that he's received since the start of the war, which were fascinating. And he said that he's seen the greatness of the Jewish people these last 20 months. He, for example, he said he got a shayla, a woman called him and said that her husband has been called up. He's a reservist and he's been called up and he's in Gaza. And she's just received a diagnosis that she has a brain tumor. And so she doesn't know what to do. Should she tell her husband, and surely he will be released in order to come home and give her the desperate support that she needs? Or does the people of Israel come first, and he's fighting for Am Yisrael, for the nation of Israel? Does that come before me? That's how this woman was thinking, an incredible holy woman. And Rabbi Rimon said, you know, what does your husband do in the army? And she said, he's a regular soldier. And he said, he's not a commander and he's not a general, and he certainly could be replaced. And therefore, you should tell him, and he should come home and give you the support you need, which is really something quite amazing. And very sadly, she passed away a year later. He went to the Shiva house, and at the Shiva house, they told him that as the day he arrived, she became a nida, so he couldn't even hug her and give her the support. And these people kept the halacha, just phenomenal, inspiring Jews that love the Jewish people, that love the Torah and observe the Torah. So that was a very moving story. He's told a few other very moving stories. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
One of the highlights of the Rabbinic Conference was hearing from Franz Cronier. Franz Cronier is a tremendous analyst and political commentator. Runs the SRF, the Social Research Foundation, and he has fascinating material information in which he goes through the current situation in South Africa, the economic situation, the political situation, and the trends that come up through these very accurate surveys that he conducts. And it's been absolutely amazing how his predictions in how he has been able in the last number of years to identify trends and therefore very accurately predict where things are going. And he was very positive about South Africa and said that it looks like the ANC continues to hemorrhage and lose support. And we will be having governments of national unity going forward. But as the ANC drops and the DA strengthens, so that bodes positively for the future of South Africa, the future of South African economy, and please God, for the future of the South African Jewish community. Another one of the highlights was the link up with the chief rabbi of Israel. The Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel is Rabbi Kalman Baer, and he spoke to us, he shared with us the experiences that Israel's been going through in the war, and how it's been a very difficult and testing time for the Jewish people. He said that if one wants to look at the essence of something, Rav Tzadok HaKohen says that one would find that where it's first mentioned in Tanakh. So you look for the essence of anything, see whether the Torah or the prophets or the writings first mention that concept, that idea, that principle, and that will be the essence of that thing. So for example, he said, the first war after we had a king was after Shaul HaMelech in Shmuel Aleph, in the book of Samuel. King Saul is anointed as king, and there's a very tense political situation, and the Jewish people are forced to go into a war. And there was the pasuk, the verses tell us that Shaul, King Saul, went to go and speak to the Giladim. The Giladim were a group. So the Kli Yakar on Nach explains and says the Giladim were actually opposed to the king and they refused to fight. And they didn't go to the king. He had to go to them. He went to them and he said to them, if you do not join us, so it's a sign of great weakness to our enemies, and we need you in order to be able to defeat our enemies. And we will all be defeated if we are defeated. And so the success of the Jewish people depends on us uniting and together facing the threats that surround us. And he said Sinwa, the intelligence shows us that Sinwa, who carried out the operation, who both designed and planned and executed the October 7th massacres, against the Jewish people. So Sinwar was given information that the Jews in Israel are so split, that there's such a division, that they won't fight, that even if the reservists are called up, they won't come. And so one would have to make the most of the situation immediately, and therefore we need to attack now. And thank God he was wrong. And although there were tremendous divisions and a lot of tension within Israeli society, but being attacked in this manner brought us all together, and we worked together, and there was a beautiful unity in Klal Israel post October 7th, both in Israel and throughout the world. And that's how we were able to strengthen ourselves and defend ourselves and defeat our enemies. And that's how we've achieved all that we've achieved, as I mentioned earlier. And so, please God, the chief rabbi said, chief rabbi of Israel said, that the Jewish people, we should all work very hard to achieve unity and reach out to our brothers and sisters and work together as one people, as one nation. And that's how we will achieve our greatness as a people spiritually. That's how we will achieve greatness in the land of Israel, and that's how we will defend our enemies. And just as he was coming to a close, his doorbell rang. So we all saw this on Zoom, and he went to the door, and he came back, and he said, Rabbi Goldstein, Yeshli Matana Bishvilcha. Rabbi Goldstein, I have a gift for you. Harav Harashi Harishon Letzion, Rav David Yosef, who wrote Levarech es Harabanim Vaha Rebetzins Midrom Africa. They said the chief rabbi, the Sfardi chief rabbi, Rabbi David Yosef, wanted to come online and give us all a brocha, which we were all very happy about and excited about. And he came in. The Sfardi chief rabbi, of course, wears his black robe with the golden twining and a hat, turban-like hat. He has a very powerful presence. And he also spoke to us, and it was amazing. He didn't hear what the Ashkenazi chief rabbi said, but he shared a very similar message. And he said also that in Israel today, it used to be when the state was declared that you had a massive rift between religious and non-religious, and they were based on ideological grounds. He said today there's not many like that anymore, and people are not necessarily anti-religious. They're just ignorant of religion. I just don't know much about religion. He told us a few stories. He said, after October 7th, a rabbi came from America, a very powerful, connected rabbi, came, and he wanted to reward those communities that suffered so terribly on October 7th. And many of the kibbutzim from the south, which are in the Gaza envelope, he bused them up to Jerusalem. He brought them to the Kotel. He had a huge banquet for them, in order just to relieve a little bit of the pressure. And part of what he did is that those young teenage boys, he asked them to put in tefillin, and he got a group of them together, and he said to them, finish this line for me, Shema Yisrael. And none of them could finish Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. None of them knew Shema Yisrael, which is like an unbelievable thing. In 2025, people living in Israel don't know Shema. It's just mind-boggling. He told another story that there was a Rav in Miami, and he came across a man from Israel, heard him speaking Hebrew, and he invited him for Shabbos. And this man said, my girlfriend's arriving this week from Israel. Can she come also? He said, yeah, of course, with pleasure. And so this young couple came to the house of the rabbi in Miami, and he told them what time to come, and they arrived just before candlelighting, and they watched his wife light candles, and then he made kiddush on Friday night. And this girl told them at the table, she said, it's the first time in her life she's ever seen anybody light Shabbos candles, and it's the first time in her life she's ever heard kiddush on Shabbos. Unbelievable. So he emphasized the importance of reaching out to our brothers and sisters. You know, even in here in South Africa, even if people are not observant, but generally people are connected and have exposure and understand Jewish tradition, and are quite traditional. We're very blessed that our community is a very traditional community. And most people are members of Orthodox shuls and are connected to Orthodox shuls, and which is a great blessing. And one of the reasons why our community has become so observant, that there's been a wonderful wave of tshuva within our South African Jewish community, because we were not as far away as many other Western Jewish communities like in the UK and like in the States and like in Canada. We are more traditional, and that's been a wonderful thing. But to think of Jews that are so far away, that are living in Israel, and it's our role to reach out and to reach out with love and with care and to try and educate our fellow Jews, our brothers and sisters, about the beauty, about the light, about the meaning, about the holiness of the Torah, and to share the light of Hashem and the Torah with Klal Yisrael. So that too was a very beautiful and very powerful message. And so in conclusion, it was a very inspiring time, and there were wonderful messages and information shared, and it really was something worthwhile. And Yasher Koach to our Chief Rabbi for pulling off a very successful rabbinic conference once more. Let me share with you some ideas about this week's Parsha. So this week we read Parsha Ki Seitzei. We're heading towards the end of the Torah, the end of Sefer Devarim, which is the last 5 weeks of Moshe's life. And Moshe sharing with the Jewish people his final testimony and preparing them for their entrance into the land. At the beginning of this week's Parsha, so Moshe tells them about some of the laws of war that the Jewish people will need to know. And he says, "Ki seitzei in the milchama al oyvecha," when you go out to war against your enemies, "and Hashem will bring you victory against your enemies." And so there are a number of halachas that apply to war, apply to captives in war, that Moshe Rabbeinu shares. But the Sifrei Musa and the Sifrei Chassidus, they say whenever war is mentioned, it doesn't only mean a war against our enemies, but the Torah is also referring to the inner battle within a human being. The Torah has a wonderful description of life and of the journey of life and of the purpose of our existence and of the work that we're supposed to be doing in this world. And that is a very clear understanding of human psychology. The Torah describes to us that the human being is made up of body and soul. The body is our physical side, is our desires and appetites for power and pleasure, which are very strong and very powerful within each and every one of us. And then we have the soul. We have the spiritual part of our being, which is a sliver of the divine, chelek elokai mimal, a part of God, a spark of Hashem. And that is the part of our being that wants to do good, that wants to do right, that wants to be moral, that wants to rise up above the lowness of our physical being. And life is a constant struggle between those two parts, between the body and the soul, between the mind, what we call the seichel, and the desires, the instincts, the passions that we all have. And a spiritually successful person is one who's able to overcome their lower self, their lower instincts, and live based on the moral high ground of the soul. And that's what connects us to God and draws us away from the lowness of the physical world. And life is about that battle and about that struggle. And it's our responsibility to empower ourselves and to ensure that we develop self-control, that we don't just give in to our base desires, that we have the strength to make the right moral choices. And the way our sages actually describe it is like a horse and a rider. The physical part of our being, what we call the Yetzer Hara, is the horse, this wild creature of power and of strength and of passion. And we also have a rider, which is the soul, which sits on top of the horse. And the challenge of life is to ensure the rider steers the horse rather than the horse steering the rider. And unfortunately, in the world around us, we don't see many riders steering the horse. We see people chasing after their passions, but we don't see much morality, self-control, holiness, where we're in control of our being and of our passions. And so there's a beautiful idea of Rosh Shlomo of Radomsk, one of the great Hasidic rabbis. And he says that often in life, in the struggle between our body and our soul, between what we call our Yetzer Tov, our good inclination, and our Yetzer Hara, our evil inclination, our negative inclination, in the struggle, so sometimes we have victories and sometimes we have losses. Sometimes we succeed in rising above those passions and urges and desires in the physical world. And we channel them in the right way. So Judaism is an amazing religion. Judaism says that all of these urges are not necessarily bad in and of themselves. We're supposed to use them in the service of spirituality, in connecting with God. We're not supposed to stub them out and completely destroy them. We're supposed to channel them in a positive way. But sometimes they get the better of us and we give in and to our desires and the Yetzer seduces us. And sometimes we're successful. But says Rav Shlomo of Radomsk, we shouldn't become despondent when we experience losses, because the purpose of life is to be engaged. And even though we fail and fall, as long as we are in the battle, as long as we're engaged in the struggle, so that is a success in and of itself. And he says that's what the beginning of our parsha is telling us. It's telling us, kiseitse, stop. When you go out, says Rav Shlomo Radomsk, that's referring to the neshama. When the neshama goes out, when the soul leaves the world of souls and goes out into this world, lemilchama, it comes to be engaged in the struggle, in this battle. And as long as we don't give in, and as long as we don't stop the battle and say, oh, there's no, you know, I'm so weak, my lower part always takes over me, I can't face it, I can't defeat it, I can't beat it. As long as we never get to that point, but we say, okay, sometimes I stumble, sometimes I fall, but I'll keep struggling, I'll keep going, and especially now in Elul, we have it's very important that we have a mindset that we don't become despondent, because Elul is the time now this month, we're in Elul, today is the 10th of Elul, and it's a time when we look at ourselves, it's the spiritual year end, we analyze where have I improved, where have I fallen, and so often we see that it's the same old things we're struggling with, and it's the same old things we're falling for through the year, and like, have I really done anything and progressed and improved? But even if that's our mindset, we shouldn't become despondent and think, you know, I'm a failure and I can't do this. As long as we're trying and we're pushing, and kiseitse, when you came, your soul came out into this world, lemilcham, it's for this battle, for the struggle. And we have to be our whole life engaged in the struggle, and please God, we will be successful and make progress and get to and grow spiritually. But just to be engaged is a victory and is a success in and of itself, which is a very beautiful, inspiring idea from the beginning of this week's Pasuk. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So let's go on to another halacha that this week's Torah reading teaches us. Parshas Kiseitse tells us that if there's a newly married couple, so the husband is exempt from national service, from being called up by the army for that first year, Shana Rishona. The Torah says that if there's a newly married person, he should go home, v'simach es ishtoy, asher lakach, and he should make happy his wife that he has married. So Rashi explains, what's this lashon, the grammar of this word v'simach? Rashi says, it's lashon pl, which means it's a lashon of doing to others. In other words, this man, this groom, has to go home and make his wife happy. And Rashi quotes Unkelus, who emphasizes this point. And it's really a beautiful principle in marriage that the Torah is teaching us, is the attitude of the couple needs to be that my responsibility, that my focus in this relationship, my attitude when I get married, is that I'm going to do the work needed to make my spouse happy. It's not about, and it's a very major departure in mindset, because so often in the world today, we see the attitude of the couple is that, what are they doing for me? How are they fulfilling my needs? How are they doing what I need them to do? The Torah is telling us that's the wrong attitude. The correct attitude, the Torah attitude in marriage, is that I'm in this marriage and I need to do the work necessary to make this a successful marriage. Now, of course, we're talking about two psychologically healthy people, two people that love each other, It's not an abusive relationship in any way. If it's abusive, of course, the couple must immediately seek help from professionals, and one should not stay in an abusive relationship. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a healthy relationship, and the attitude of each one, husband and wife, should be, what can I do to make my partner happy? How can I fulfill their needs? What work do I do to make them feel loved, to make them feel secure, to make them feel nurtured, to make them feel heard? And that's not an easy thing to do, but that needs to be the mindset of both husband and wife. And if that is our approach, and if that is our attitude, so we have a much greater chance of the marriage working. And that is where spiritual growth comes from, because the Torah teaches us that we need to learn to break out of our natural default selfish mindset. The way we're all created is we're very selfish creatures, and we only see ourselves. We see ourselves as the center of the universe. But the tremendous opportunity of marriage, and that's why the Torah commands us to get married, is to do the work of removing yourself from the center and putting somebody else in the center. That's a huge amount of work of seeing another and being aware of another and acting in a way where that other is the center. So, of course, we're not saying you must be a doormat and you must be trampled all over and you must be a nothing, a wimp. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that to do that inner work, to see the other and to be cognizant of the needs of the other. When we're able to do that and hold ourselves back and create space for the other, so then we're able to do that with Hashem as well. We're able to see God in the world. So therefore, marriage is the training ground for spiritual growth, and for seeing our spouse, and for living a life in which we're cognizant of the needs of our spouse. And we have a child, and there's somebody else as well who's at the center over there. So that's all a great opportunity for spiritual growth. And when we build those muscles, we're able also then to hold ourselves back and see God and see Hashem in the world. So the Torah is very clearly telling us that that's the attitude of a husband and a wife, is to make the other one happy. And Rabbi Fran says something very beautiful. He says that we have a blessing when a boy or a girl is born. When a boy is born, usually at the bris, we say, "Shetiske legadlo Torah chupa ma'asim." We say to the parents, they should merit to raise him to Torah chupa ma'asim tovim. And in the birth of a girl, we say, "Shetiske legadla," you should merit to raise her to Torah chupa ma'asim tovim. But why is it that order? Why is it Torah chupa ma'asim tovim? It really should be l'Torah, which means to learn Torah, to observe Torah. L'ma'asim tovim u'l'chupa. Chupa should be at the end. The surely ma'asim tovim, the good deeds, come before chupa. And the way Rabbi Friend explains it very beautifully, he says that although, of course, we can do acts of kindness, ma'asim tovim, before we are married, but it's only when a couple is involved in a relationship that these good deeds actually reach a much higher level, because they require for a person to see somebody else and to do have the intention of doing real kindness for that person. So, for example, I'll give you maybe some basic examples. Let's say a husband and wife, they're painting their house, and the husband likes the color gray. He wants it to be a dark gray. And his wife wants the house to be white or off-white. And so what do you do? So to v'simach es ishto means that the husband should say, okay, we can go for that white, because he knows it will make his wife happy, and he holds himself back. So that's true ma'asim tovim. Or his wife's asked him to go pick up some supper from Moishi's on the way home, or from, you know, from Pick and Pay, and from the kosher deli at Pick and Pay. And he likes beef, and he knows his wife likes chicken. So what does he buy for supper? He buys the chicken, because that's his wife's favorite. So that's ma'asim tovim. So it's Torah chupa and ma'asim tovim. Of course, there are ma'asim tovim before you're married, but when you're married, it really requires inner work to do kindness for another on a different level. So that's why the blessing is made in that order. So mirtza Hashem, we should be successful in our marriages, and we should see the other and live with the cognizance of the other. And that's why, unfortunately, we often see marriages don't work out, because sometimes, I mean, obviously the human beings are complicated and there's many things going on, but often we have the wrong attitude and we don't want to do the work we need to in order to put that person in the place where they need to be and do the tremendous work to make them happy. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
There were a number of dates that I wanted to go through with you, interesting milestones and landmarks this week, but we don't have much time left, so I'll cut some out. I'll maybe take two that we will highlight. The first one being this past Monday was the 8th of Elul. Today's the 10th of Elul. So on Monday, the 8th of Elul, on the date of the 8th of Elul in 1893, kosher slaughter was declared illegal in Switzerland, a ban that continues until today. That same year, kosher slaughter was prohibited in the German region of Saxony. Today, Norway also bans kosher slaughter, and other European countries, such as the UK, have taken the matter under consideration. Sometimes these laws are anti-Semitic in nature, but couched in humanitarian terms. The issue is one of great sensitivity to the Jewish community, being that one of the first enactments of the Nazis in 1933 was to outlaw kosher slaughter, an act of horrible irony that preceded the slaughter of 6 million Jews. Yesterday was the 9th of Elul, also a very important, significant date, because on the 9th of Elul, yesterday, in the year 1267, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, otherwise known as the Ramban, Nachmanides, arrived in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. He had been forced to flee his native Spain in the aftermath of the great debate of Barcelona, where he was challenged by and beat the apostate Jew Pablo Cristiani. He first fled from Spain to Castile in France, but eventually made his way to Eretz Yisrael. When the Ramban arrived in Yerushalayim, the city had just been through 2 centuries of Crusader wars. Most Jews had fled to other parts of the country, and there was only a very small community in Yerushalayim. So remember, don't be fooled by the lies they tell you in the press and the revisionist anti-Semitic historians. Jews have been in the land of Israel for more than 3,000 years, and there was always a Jewish community in Israel, and we are certainly the indigenous people of Israel. The Palestinians only came about 150 years ago in the late 19th century when Jews were beginning to return to the area. The Ramban in 1267 was distressed by the fact that there was such a small community in Yerushalayim. He built a shul. It was active until the War of Independence in 1948, when it was destroyed by the Arabs, along with every synagogue in the old city. In stark contrast, when the Jews took control of the city in 1967, after the Six-Day War, they left every single mosque intact. So the way Jews deal with other religions is very different to the way the Muslims deal with Jews. The Ramban synagogue was then restored and functions until this day, which is an incredible thing. I'm sure many of our listeners have been to the Ramban synagogue. It is right by the Chorva. So the Chorva was the biggest city in the old city that was blown up by the Jordanian legion after the 48 war. The Ramban synagogue is right next to it, a little bit below it. And it still has minyanim operating there. In fact, there's a minyan factory there. You could catch a Shacharis Mincha Maariv pretty much at any time if you go there. And it's very worthwhile. I love davening in that shul. Whenever I go to Eretz Yisrael, I try and make a point of davening in the Ramban Shul just because of its historic value and what it represents for the Jewish people. Many look at this day as the beginning of the resettlement of Jews in Jerusalem in 1267. They were kicked out by the Crusaders in 1095 and again in 1187. Saladin, the Sultan of Egypt, allowed the Jews to return upon his victory over the Crusaders, but it wasn't fulfilled until the initiative of the Ramban that the city's Jewish life was reunited and became vibrant once more. And since then, it has been there's been a very strong community in the heart of the capital of the Jewish people, Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.